This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense is powered by InsureLit from Sun Life Malaysia.
Good morning, you're tuned in to Ringgit and Sense, a show all about personal finance, and I'm Wong Xiao Ning. When it comes to investing in the stock market, there are various strategies to consider. One approach that has gained popularity in the last few years is, of course, value investing, which refers to buying unappreciated or undervalued stocks or businesses when others perhaps are not so optimistic or in fact selling. But how do you find some opportunities in value stocks right now, as a lot of stocks are beginning to look expensive and the theme is on growth? Joining me to discuss this is Farid Ridzwan. He's the Vice President of the CFA Society Malaysia. He's of course also a fund manager at a government-linked investment fund and has more than 10 years of investment-related work experience, including fund management, equity research, quantitative research and fintech. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Farid. Now, help us understand at the very beginning, what is value investing all about? Because most of us look to Warren Buffett as the guru of this.
Yeah, you would think, you know, value investing has been around for a long time, right? And you would think that there will be like some unified definition of what value investing is.
Like a textbook, right?
Exactly, right? And there is actually, there is a textbook. The first textbook, Security Analysis, that was written all the way back in 1934.
And it's still relevant?
That's the big question, right? That's the big question. So value investing, you know, people would think like, the you know, it's been around for so long that there would be at least one definition. But the truth is that, you know, there are actually a few ways to kind of define it. But at the core, value investing simply just means buying something that's at $1 for 50 cents. Yeah.
So buy something cheaper than its intrinsic value.
Exactly.
Or real value.
That's right.
But I'm going to get to the issue of what is the real value, right? That's I think, the conundrum that most investors have. So how different is this from growth investing, which is something we keep hearing again and again in the last few years?
Yeah. So there are a few definitions of value. And, you know, there's the academic definition of value. And then I would say, you know, that's the practitioner's definition of value, right? So if you're thinking about the academic version of value, that really refers to, you know, measures like price to book, low price to book, or low price to earnings, or high dividend yield stocks. So that's the academic way, right? But in the practitioner's way of defining value, there's actually quite a few ways to kind of look at it. Yeah, you know, like, you know, I kind of think about it as three ways. There's kind of three ways to define it. There's passive value, and then there's more active value. And then finally, I think, you know, I call it more like tilting towards value.
You have to explain each one because you're introducing a lot of new terms, actually. So what's the difference between active, passive, and tilting value then?
Yeah. So passive value will be using screens. Right, the academic version of doing things. So that's looking for or screening for low price to book stocks, low price to earning stocks, high dividend yield stocks. So that's passive.
You're just creating like thresholds and nothing that is above price to book of 0.8 times, for example.
Exactly right.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's passive. And then we have active value, where you start off with the same thing, right? But then you add on something, which is, you know, your assessment of management quality, for example, the company's competitive mode, you know, something along those lines. So that is what we call active value investing. You have to use your brain a little bit.
The first step is screening,
yes,
which is passive.
Yes.
And then the second step is where you have to do a bit of analysis.
Correct. You have to think a little bit. Think a little bit. And the third one, we're calling tilting, right? So that is where, that one you have to use another type of brain. You don't have to use your mathematical kind of brain.
Okay.
Where you start off with, you know, like the benchmark, which is like your KLCI, your index, and then you tilt it slightly towards those measures that we talked about earlier.
So you have to do some assumptions and do some calculations.
Yeah, some statistical analysis, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So how does that differ from growth investing then? Because where growth are, you know, this is like so popular in the last few years, especially with the Magnificent Seven being talked about so much. Everyone says growth stocks, especially AI. How is that different from value?
Yeah. So, once again, right, to the academic version. So, the academic version would say that it's just simply the inverse of value. So instead of low price to book, it's high price to book stocks and so on and so forth with PE and dividend yield. But the practitioner's view, and this one is a little bit more interesting because to a practitioner, what is the difference between a value and growth stock, right? Because if a stock, you know, is worth, say, 90 times PE today, but if it's growing so fast that it doubles, you know, in the next, you know, it doubles every 2 years, for example, then in 4 years' time, that stock is only 20 times PE. You see what I mean? So that suddenly becomes cheap.
Yeah.
Right. So from a practitioner's point of view, value investing and growth investing only differs in the time
horizon that you're looking at.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm going to come back to the separation of the two investment teams in a minute. And because I think what I've seen headlines is like, you know, they say value investing is dead, long live growth investing. But defenders of value investing will say there's still relevance of it, although I think statistics prove in the last 15 years, if you're a growth investor, you might have outperformed. Mm-hmm. But they will say, look at the dot-com bubble as a reason to justify value investing. So if we rewind all the way back to March 2000, NASDAQ rallied to 4,570 points, then corrected sharply. And then it took 14 years for NASDAQ to return to those levels. Mm. So if you were indeed a growth investor, you would have been hit hard, right? Because you would have just taken that rally, gone with it. But do you think 2024 is a totally different time nowadays in terms of how to look at stocks? Because it's just a different era. And many of the tech companies today actually have earnings.
Yeah.
Just that PE ratios are extremely high.
Mm. I think we have to also draw a distinction there, right? Was it a growth investing rally in the 2000s or was it a speculative bubble, right? Because those are two very different kind of things, right? I mean, if you think about Japan, right, was that a growth rally or was that like a speculative bubble, right, back in the 80s? So I think that is the biggest distinction we have to draw. So growth investing really, you know, we kind of bring it back to first principles, right? What is growth investing? So growth investing really is all about, as you mentioned earlier on, right? It's today, we're seeing these stocks have earnings, but not only that, right? We're also seeing those stocks have you know, gaining market share. You know, everybody is using it in their daily lives and you know, its prevalence in your everyday kind of use. It's
real.
It's real.
Okay.
Yeah. To put it that way.
But then some would argue that AI is real, but maybe the valuations have run ahead of the reality of the monetization of it.
Yep.
Then how do you not get trapped into at some point saying, yeah, there is value or there is potential, but it's gone beyond that?
And that's...
Is that the challenge for value or whether it's growth investing?
Absolutely. So, you know, if we come to the whole profession of investing in the first place, there's always two parts to it. There's part one, where we talk about the business model, then we talk about how the industry will evolve. That's one part of it. But there's always a second part, which is valuation. And valuation is very strict. If you think about valuation, it's very defined, right? And valuation just depends on those three things, you know, three fundamental principles. One is the cash flow, what's the growth, and what's the risk of that stock, right? So we have to understand that, you know, and I think a lot... I think I always have to say that the main issue right now is that people tend to focus on the business model. That's part one, while forgetting the second part, right? And then that second part is what really defines, what valuation is.
Okay, and should that always anchor you in terms of when you look at investments? But the issue then is, do you then adjust your valuations based on the theme or maybe even market factors? For example, you know, currently, even though the Fed has raised rates, there's still a lot of liquidity in the system. So it's perhaps this is what they say, risk on mode. Does that change? Should that change the valuations you assign to a particular company?
Yeah. So we have to draw a clear difference between valuation and pricing.
Okay.
Right? The value of a stock versus the price of a stock. So value, as I mentioned earlier on, is very strict.
It doesn't change, right?
It's not that it doesn't change, but what I'm trying to say is that value is a reflection of your estimates of cash flow, growth risk, but it's very defined. But price, on the other hand, that one is influenced by market sentiment, market mood, right? Liquidity, especially. There is a major impact on pricing of a stock. So if you're a value investor, focus on value, right?
Mm.
You know, but I tend to say that the biggest mistake a lot of people make, and this is why they tend to buy high, sell low, mm. is that they call themselves a value investor, but they're using price-based measures, okay. which is, you're playing two different games.
Okay, I'm going to ask you whether it's possible to reconcile the two, though, in a minute. But I've been speaking to Farid Rizwan, Vice President of the CFA Society Malaysia, on the case for value investing. We'll be taking a short break for some messages. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned for Ringgit and Sense, powered by InsureLit from Sun Life Malaysia.
BFM 89.9, welcome back. You're tuned in to Ringgit and Sense. I'm Wong Shan Ling. Today, we're discussing the basics of value investing. Joining me to discuss this is Farid Rizwan, Vice President of the CFA Society Malaysia. Let's continue this conversation on that pricing and value.
Mm.
Can you marry the two? How do you do that? Because if you end up just being very disciplined and being a complete value investor, saying, okay, I will only buy this stock if the PE is, you know, 12 times, price to book is 0.8 times. I'm getting hypothetical situations, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like the management, it's in the right sector. What happens if you end up with nothing? There's nothing that meets your criteria and yet stocks are running. What do you do? How do you... You might end up missing the boat completely, right?
Yes, that's actually... I don't know, you put it very well. Why do I say that? Because if you talk to value investors, they always have this thing which, you know, this concept which we mentioned earlier on, but they call it the term it margin of safety.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, they say it has to be a certain price and whatnot. If that is the fact, and you kind of look, and the best way I kind of look at someone and then say, hey, you know what? There's just too much of margin of safety in your particular portfolio. It's really simple. I just look at their portfolio, right? If it's 80% cash and 20% stocks, that means your margin of safety is just too much, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're supposed to, you know, that means that you are, you know, committing what we call type 2 error. You know? So type 2 error really means that you might be avoiding the too expensive stocks, but you're also avoiding all the undervalued stocks because you're putting too much of a margin of safety.
So
but the whole game of investing is to make sure that, you know, you're treading that fine line, you know, the balance between those two.
And the balance between those two is subject to your own risk appetite, isn't
it? Absolutely.
So you need to do a little bit of a channel check in terms of how much you're prepared to invest and how much you're prepared to lose, because not all investments go right.
Exactly.
Now, the other thing, another issue I have with value investing, if you're very driven by buying what is, I'm going to put in air quotes, cheap, sometimes the sector can be cheap for a reason, because it's in structural decline. For example, you know, if we talk about cable television or traditional media, which is all being replaced, those stocks are cheap for a reason. So how do we avoid these value traps, I call them?
Yeah. So it goes back to cash flow, growth and risk gain, right? You always have to go back to those first principles, right? So you're asking yourself, is the cash flow consistent? Is it going to be there? Is it going to remain as it is, normalized on a normalized basis? That's the first part. Second one is growth, right? Is there any growth expected? And growth can be, you know, low at this particular point in time. But maybe it's just because it's in a cyclical industry, right? And then you expect that those cycles to come and go. Or is it structural? Is it cyclical or is it structural? If it's structural, then that's obviously a big red flag. You don't want to be in that industry because it's all about the future.
Okay, so it doesn't matter how cheap it is, it'll just get cheaper and cheaper, right?
Exactly, right? And the last one is risk, right? If you're in a industry that's in a structural decline, what does that tell you about the risk?
Yeah.
It's at risk of being replaced entirely.
But I would also argue that for value investors, some people say you just have to wait a long time. Warren Buffett being the classic example of this, right? He's a man with extreme patience. He's in his 90s and he's still waiting, waiting to for a good entry price, sometimes just waiting in terms of that company turning around. How much, I mean, for a normal person like me, how much can I wait? And then, you know, there is a time value to money, isn't it?
Mm.
So how do we manage this though?
You know, you mentioned Warren Buffett, and one of my favorite quotes from Warren Buffett is, he said, investing is simple, but not easy. That's what he said.
Okay.
Right? And I always keep that to heart. And it's true, because value investing, let me just kind of put the conclusion out there first. Value investing works if you're looking at a time horizon of 8 to 10 years.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at a shorter time horizon, between 5 years, there are massive periods of time where it doesn't work. In Malaysia, for example, I looked at between 2009 to 2024, right? Between 2012 and 2016, value investing did horribly, you know? So that's 4 out of 15 years. You're talking more than 25% of the time where it doesn't work. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So if you're talking about being patient, yes, 8 to 10 years, but does everyone really have that
time horizon,
exactly,
right?
That time horizon.
So then what do we do if we still want to be a value investor? Mm. How do we overcome all these volatility in markets and overcoming cycles?
Yep. The number one thing to do is be diversified in your concentration, right? So what does that mean? A lot of people, and especially when it comes to investing, a lot of them tend to think like, you know, I'm trying to chase those high returns. Mm. And for me to chase those high returns, what do I have to do? Is that I'm going to have to just hold a few stocks, right? And then hope those 3 or 4 stocks
do well.
Yeah. And then that's how I'm going to, you know, retire or whatnot. You know, that's
be
how I'm
a
gonna,
millionaire.
Exactly. That's how I'm going to buy my Lamborghini, for example, right?
Yeah.
That's not how he works.
Okay, so it goes back to having a diversified portfolio, yes. More than 3 or 4 stocks. And maybe it can even be a combination of value stocks now, which eventually become growth stocks or existing growth stocks, all combined in one single portfolio.
Yeah, correct. So you diversify not just in the stocks, but in terms of styles.
Okay.
You see, that's really important. So you have to be diversified in terms of styles. So not only do you have to have value stocks, you have to have growth stocks. So you have to look at it and start to look at your portfolio as a portfolio. And what's a portfolio? A portfolio is a combination of stocks, right? The people tend to spend too much time looking at individual stocks when they fail to understand that it's actually the portfolio that matters.
So it's a construction that you have to pay attention to. But how do you, for a retail investor, like say for me, and I'm not Warren Buffett, right? I don't have gazillions of dollars. I just have a small amount of money, let's say 10,000, 15,000. How do I go about building that first portfolio for myself?
Oh, that's a great question. So first of all, you have to always start off with the what we call the IPS, your investor personal, I mean, your profile, profile of your own self, right? What is your return and what's your return objective? What's your return and what's your risk objective? Mm. That's something that you absolutely have to start off with, right? Understand why are you investing? What's the goal of you investing for, right? And then for how long?
The duration.
And then ask yourself, and this is really important, ask yourself, who am I as an investor? So there's a lot of introspection that comes into it. And a lot of people can say, you know, they tend to be like, oh, I'm a risk taker. I love to do skydiving. But the moment, you know, a stock goes in their portfolio, goes down 5%, they're like, I'm out.
Cannot sleep. Okay. So be honest with yourself.
Exactly. A lot of introspection. You know why this is really important? Because when things start to go against you, you need that belief to be in place for you to stick to the plan. Right? If you, the moment you deviate from that plan, that's why you see a lot of them not achieving their
goals
and financial goals.
Okay, assuming you've done all that introspection, you've thought about it, and you're ready to lose money, okay? Not only just make money.
Yeah.
What's the first thing that you should do if you want to buy a value stock and you still believe in the value investing? How do you go about that?
Right. So let me just tell you about the 3 tools of portfolio management. The same way like a carpenter has a saw and hammer and nails, right? So does a portfolio manager. So does anyone who has to look at a pot of money and ask himself, how do I invest this pot of money? So the 3 tools is SA, your strategic asset allocation, your tactical asset allocation, and security selection. So a lot of people tend to spend too much time asking, what kind of stock should I put inside that? But security selection is just one out of the 3 tools. The most important one is the first one, strategic asset allocation, where you're thinking to yourself, okay, you know, how much money do I have to put in equity in my home, for example? Because that is the most, right?
I mean, yeah, the most valuable asset you're going to own.
Exactly, right? So you have to look at that in totality and then ask yourself, okay, now that I have my assets, how am I going to allocate between that, right? And then tactical asset allocation, that's when you take a little bit of you know, short-term bets. Oh, interest rate is low now. I should go
risk on,
right? Mm-hmm. But don't deviate from your plan, right?
Okay.
Don't deviate too much from your plan. Maybe put some guardrails in place, +5%, -5%, right? And then only the last part, only then you think about, okay, how do I now select the stocks that go into my portfolio? So that is really important.
And it doesn't matter whether you're a retail or institutional, long or short fund manager.
No, it only matters if you're looking at a pot of money and asking yourself, how do I invest this pot of money? That's it.
So it sounds like value investing requires a bit of discipline, or at least investing in general requires a great deal of discipline.
Yes, it is.
And introspection.
Yeah.
And if it's not suitable for you, maybe just you can go passive also, right?
I was just about to say that. And actually, that's the answer for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people.
Whether it's to buy a fund or exchange traded fund or maybe just hand over more money to EPF. It's also an option.
Yeah, there is actually. And they've done a fantastic job actually. You know.
That's all the time we have for Ring In Sense this morning. I've been speaking to Farid Rizwan, Vice President of the CFA Society Malaysia. Join us again next week for more discussions on personal finance. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by my colleagues at Enterprise. I'm Wong Xiaoning from The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Ring It In Sense was powered by InsureLit from Sun Life Malaysia, empowering you towards a financially fit future.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.